This episode of the OrthoBullets podcast will go over the topic of arthroplasty preoperative medical optimization from the Recon section on orthobullets.com. As a quick overview, preoperative optimization of the patient who is planned for a total hip arthroplasty or total knee arthroplasty is critical to improving outcomes. Optimization can be broken down into the following categories: medical optimization, preoperative counseling, VTE prophylaxis, anesthesia plan, and pain management plan. We'll talk about each of these categories in a bit more detail now. Starting with medical optimization, the goal is to identify possible risk factors that increase the risk of complications postoperatively. These include things like diabetes, obesity, cardiovascular disease, blood transfusion, renal disease, methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus, tobacco abuse, and illicit drug use. With respect to diabetes, you should screen patients with hyperglycemia with hemoglobin A1c testing. A hemoglobin A1c of greater than 6.7 is associated with an increased risk of wound complications. The exact hemoglobin A1c target, which should roughly be less than 8, varies by surgeon and hospital. Not all patients will be able to achieve the target. Moving on to obesity, this has been consistently shown to increase the risk of postoperative complications, for example, acute kidney failure, cardiovascular complications, wound complications, and infection. A BMI of greater than 40 has been used in many studies as having an increased risk of complications, but this is a continuous variable without a clear cutoff. Weight loss of greater than 5% may be needed to decrease the risk. Bariatric surgery may have a role. Moving on to cardiovascular disease, preoperative cardiovascular disease and older age are major risk factors for postoperative cardiovascular events. You should delay elective surgery in patients whose dual antiplatelet therapy will be stopped within 30 days from a bare metal stent and 12 months after a drug elution stent. Clopidogrel management should be discussed with a cardiologist and restarted as soon as possible. Stopping 7 days pre-op can lower bleeding events and the need for transfusion without increasing perioperative cardiovascular events. Moving on to blood transfusion, perioperative blood transfusions are associated with higher rates of postoperative complications. Moving on to renal disease, patients on dialysis at the time of total hip arthroplasty or total knee arthroplasty have a 10 to 20 times increased risk of complications. End-stage renal disease patients may have improved outcomes if they undergo elective kidney transplant prior to arthroplasty. However, you have to weigh the risk of transient septicemia from dialysis versus immunosuppression following transplant. Moving on to methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus, some screen for MRSA colonization and decolonize with mupirocin ointment or chlorhexidine wipes. Some implement a universal decolonization protocol, which has some evidence to be cost-effective. Moving on to tobacco use, there is an increased risk of postoperative complications and infection with tobacco use. Referral to a formal smoking cessation program is recommended. Patients should have at least 6 weeks of cessation, and nicotine testing should be done preoperatively. As far as illicit drug use, history of substance abuse / misuse has a 5 times increased risk of mortality. There's an increased risk of infectious and non-infectious complications as well. There's a higher risk of mortality, readmission, and reoperation in patients who failed a toxicology screen. Now let's talk about preoperative counseling, specifically expectations and social support. Starting with expectations, patient satisfaction after arthroplasty may be heavily based on expectations rather than functional outcome. Patients tend to be overly optimistic and have too high of expectations. Preoperatively setting expectations for pain, functional outcomes, and possible complications can help make expectations more realistic. In terms of social support, preoperative assessment of social support may allow for optimization and discharge planning prior to surgery. Psychological distress may impact pain management postoperatively. Absence of anxiety may lead to lower pain scores and better functional outcome postoperatively. Social support can affect length of stay, readmission rates, and non-home discharge. Moving on to VTE prophylaxis, there is a balance in each individual patient weighing the risk of bleeding versus postoperative VTE event and subsequent complications or mortality. The American College of Chest Physicians recommends mechanical compression devices plus one of the following: vitamin K antagonists like warfarin, low molecular weight heparins like enoxaparin, aspirin, factor 10A inhibitors like apixaban or rivaroxaban, pentasaccharides like fondaparinux, and direct thrombin inhibitors like dabigatran. The American Association of Orthopedic Surgeons recommends a pharmacologic agent, mechanical compression device, or both for VTE prophylaxis in patients with no increased risk of VTE event. Aspirin is preferred by many surgeons given its oral route, compliance rates, cost, and low bleeding rates. Moving on to anesthesia, neuraxial anesthesia, for example, spinal anesthesia, is felt to lower postoperative complications due to lower stress than general anesthesia. Retrospective studies have shown neuraxial anesthesia to have lower surgical time, infection, postoperative cardiovascular events, transfusion rates, and length of stay. Finally, let's talk about pain management plans. The goal is adequate pain control for early mobilization, improved patient-reported outcomes, and shorter length of stay. This should be a multimodal approach, which includes oral medications, periarticular injections, and peripheral nerve block. Oral medications can be given preoperatively and postoperatively. Preoperatively, NSAIDs like COX-2 inhibitors and pregabalin decrease opiate consumption, lower pain scores, and improve range of motion without affecting bleeding. Postoperatively, you should continue these medications with the addition of judicious use of oral opiate medication with different durations of action. Opiate-related adverse drug events have been found to cause up to 50% of post-arthroplasty complications. Periarticular injections are usually a concoction, often of local anesthetic, opiates, and NSAIDs injected into the capsule and soft tissues around a total hip arthroplasty or total knee arthroplasty. In total knee arthroplasty, periarticular injections have been shown to be equally as effective as femoral nerve blocks and may be cheaper, safer, and easier. In total hip arthroplasty, periarticular injections are felt to decrease opioid, improve pain control, and improve function postoperatively. Peripheral nerve block are excellent for pain control, but depending on the nerve, may affect muscle function and recovery. In the setting of total hip arthroplasty, you can use a lumbar plexus block, psoas block, femoral nerve block, or a sciatic nerve block. In the setting of a total knee arthroplasty, you can use a femoral nerve block, adductor canal block, and a sciatic nerve block. Keep in mind that an adductor canal block gives similar pain control to femoral blocks without causing quadriceps weakness. A sciatic nerve block may help posterior knee pain, but can affect muscle function significantly. Okay, so now that we've gone over the major points about this topic, let's go over one quick question to apply the information and get a sense of how this topic might be tested. A 79-year-old patient has a history of peripheral vascular disease and reports chronic knee pain. She has had coronary artery disease treated with angiography and stents on two occasions. Peripheral pulses are decreased in both lower extremities, but the patient is disabled by advanced chronic degenerative arthritis in her right knee and would like to proceed with a total knee arthroplasty. The next most appropriate evaluation should include which of the following? And the choices are 1, ankle brachial index of the affected lower extremity, 2, femoral popliteal angiography, 3, venous Dopplers of both lower extremities, 4, MRI of the popliteal fossa, and 5, radiographs to identify calcified plaques in the femoral artery. The correct answer is 1, ankle brachial index of the affected lower extremity. So this question is designed to draw attention to the fact that peripheral vascular disease carries an increased risk of complications for the patient and should be carefully evaluated. The vascular surgeon will make the choice of revascularization or surgical clearance for knee reconstruction based on the initial results of the ankle brachial index. That's all for this review about arthroplasty preoperative medical optimization. Hopefully that was helpful. This is the OrthoBullets podcast, a daily audio review session by OrthoBullets, the free learning and collaboration community for orthopedic surgery education. Keep in mind that these podcasts are designed to go along with the topics on orthobullets.com, and in fact, you can listen to these episodes right on the OrthoBullets website or mobile app while going through the topic. If you've gotten any value from the OrthoBullets podcast so far, please consider leaving us a 5-star rating and writing us a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. It will help us spread the word and increase our discoverability tremendously. Also, if you aren't already, be sure to follow OrthoBullets on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, and YouTube for daily high-yield content. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you all tomorrow, right here on the OrthoBullets podcast.